activities over there out of just an interest that you had?
Yes. I think that basically that Europe has a long history of labor organizing, and that was really important for me to experience.
Nice. Thank you very much. We are running out of time. I wish we had about 2 more hours to discuss this, but you can encourage friends to sign up for his class next time around. And thank you so much for joining us this evening. This is Lane Ponce, your host, and tune in every Monday between 6 and 6:30 for Labor Radio. Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. Tonight on Prison Pipeline, we are joined by Rachel Wallace. Rachel is a fiber artist and a teacher at Coffee Creek with the quilting program. My name is Emma Lugo. I'm one of the co-hosts of Prison Pipeline, and we're going to be talking tonight about Rachel, about her work, and about the quilting program at Coffee Creek. Welcome, Rachel.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. So we met at Coffee Creek doing volunteer training a while back. And one of our very first episodes we ever had of Prison Pipeline was with the founder of the quilting program, I think more than a decade ago. I think even longer than that, maybe 17 or 18 years ago. So I know that the quilting program goes way back at Coffee Creek. Rachel, tell me a little bit about the program at Coffee Creek. What is it?
Well, the program at Coffee Creek is really incredible. As far as I know, it is unique in the nation in terms of quilting programs in prisons. It has 4 classes over the course of the week, some in the evening, some during the day, and during the morning. Each class has between 20 and 30 students. This takes place over at the minimum side of Coffee Creek. And even with that many sessions going on, there's constantly a fairly long waiting list to get into the class. Each class has 4 or 5 teachers, each of whom has a number of students that they supervise personally. So there's a lot of really close one-on-one work between instructor and student. And during the course of the class, students make 3 quilts. The first 2 are donated, usually to hospice programs or programs for young children with illnesses. And then the 3rd quilt is a quilt that the student can design, make for themselves, and either keep it inside Coffee Creek or mail it off to their friends or family. And I know that's a really big incentive for most of the women who do the program. They all love the idea of giving back through these donated quilts, but being able to make this beautiful thing either to connect you more closely to the people on the outside or just to bring some color and life into your cell at Coffee Creek is such an important thing. And the other really neat thing about the program is that it's sort of open-ended. It can take anywhere from 9 months to 3 years for a student to complete the program. You're not done until you finish your 3rd quilt. And it means that given the sort of hectic routine of the prison, you know, women are called out for changed work schedules or court hearings, or their block isn't, you know, let go for the class period, they're still able to move forward at their own pace. And I really appreciate it. It also means that Students who have never seen a sewing machine before in their life can really take their time and get started, not feel like they're slowing down the group or that they have to keep up. I think in terms of educational programs, either inside or outside of prison, it's a really remarkable and well-planned and run program.
So when you say sewing machine, I'm imagining that people are sitting around sewing machines like, doing patterns. Can you talk a little bit of like what is the actual process that people are doing in the program?
Yeah, well, the program takes place in the cafeteria. We don't have a dedicated sewing studio, but we have a great supply of really good quality, quilting sewing machines. And the women come in, we bring in new students sort of in groups. So in January, for example, we're going to bring in a batch of new students. I should hopefully have two new students myself. And to start out, they each get a very simple quilt pattern and fabric that's been pre-picked out for them by volunteers. So first quilts are usually straight lines, very simple. We make lap quilts approximately, so 60 to 80 inches. And we work with our students through all of the steps to sort of make a basic quilt. So not only this, how to operate a sewing machine and sewing, but also how to measure and how to iron and how to use rotary blades and quilting rollers, all of which is a lot trickier than you would expect, even if you have a history with sewing. So our students sort of work through that process first, reading through the pattern, cutting out the pieces, assembling them. Once they have their quilt top finished, we basted the three layers together, so that's sewing together the back of the quilt, the batting, and the top of the quilt. They quilt by machine. The quilting stitches are the stitches that hold all of those three pieces together. And then we actually hand bind the binding onto the quilt. So it's a really thorough process. We don't sort of dumb anything down for our students. We make quilts the same way that I make quilts at home. And the second quilt is also from a kit that's been assembled by volunteers, but tends to be a little bit more complicated. So we start bringing in triangles and diagonal lines. And once the women are a little bit more comfortable operating the machines, we allow them to work on a much more complex pattern. The Coffee Creek program has a huge number of volunteers. Beyond the women who actually teach in the program, we have a huge group of volunteers who take in fabric donations, who wash and iron and sort all of the fabric, and who put together these packets, I think with a lot of love, who think a lot about who is going to be receiving the quilts, but also about the varying taste of the women in the program. So you'll see a wide range of sort of like girly quilts or quilts that are clearly for children, but also I think some really interesting or striking or graphic combinations of colors and prints. And then for the third print, the third quilt, depending on what the student wants, we do our best to really go through this huge stash of quilt fabric we have to find the designs, to find the colors that our students want, and really allow them to fully express themselves through the materials we get for them. There are some limitations, but we have a really remarkable collection of fabric. So even when there's a request of, I want antique cars or a rodeo theme, those are usually things we're able to figure out.
Has anybody ever done a crazy quilt?
I'm sure that somebody has, not since I've been there, but we do have students sort of working outside a traditional pattern. So we had a student who finished, who got out this summer, who did a ton of hand embroidery and hand quilting on her piece. She had flowers that she had sewn on there and bees and butterflies. And we have another student who's, instead of having a pattern, sort of designing something herself with stars on a background that sort of represents her aesthetic. So we really try and, give our students all of the options.
Do insiders, while they're doing the quilting, do they have a chance to talk and interact with each other?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think most quilters would say that talking is the best part of quilting with other people. It's a very sort of slow and meditative process, and it really gives you a chance to get to know people. And so there's a lot of talking both between the students and the instructors and between the students themselves. usually within our little small groups of students who are working with the same instructor. But I've really been lucky enough to get some chance to hang out with almost all of the students, because especially the parts that involve hand sewing, it's all hands on deck. If you're not working on something else, then you try and sit down for a couple of minutes and help that part go a little bit faster.
What is it about the process of making a quilt that might be beneficial or maybe therapeutic for someone in Coffee Creek?
I think there are a lot of different things that make this such a like beneficial process. I know for myself, I've lived with depression and anxiety, and quilting is such a therapeutic process for me. You know, it's really repetitive, it's really sort of process-based, and even when you don't feel like you're making progress anywhere else in your life, you can, like, do these things and make something functional in the world and feel like you've accomplished something. And I know for the students, they've said to me that it's helpful for them to feel this connection with the outside, with the people who are receiving their quilts. But it's also a place for them to have some sort of control over their environment and over what they're doing, to make these choices, to be able to say, yes, I want to do this way, and no, I don't want to do that, which isn't necessarily something that they experience in their day-to-day inside Coffee Creek. And I just think interacting with beautiful things is good for the soul, you know, like seeing colors, seeing patterns, making art is really good for everyone, regardless of their situation.
Mm-hmm. It's really, I've seen some of the quilts. They're beautiful. Is there some place where people can go to see some of the work? I mean, that the insiders have created. Is there like a website or?
There is. I believe there are some photos of the work after it's been received by the organizations that they're donated to. Often they send us pictures of the people with their quilts. And you can see that on the Coffee Creek website.
Okay.
And I believe on the Coffee Creek Facebook page.
Oh, wow. So let's talk about the program a little bit. Do you know how did it, do you know anything about the history of how it started? Or?
I do know. Mm-hmm. And I apologize if this is sort of telephone, if I get anything wrong. But I believe the founder of the program went to church with the program director at Coffee Creek when it was first opening up. And she was involved with a quilting group at the church, and he came by and said, you know, I think it would be really great if you taught quilting at Coffee Creek. So the program is as old as the prison, as far as I know. And it's grown a lot and expanded a lot over the years. And the women who teach with me, a number of them have been teaching there for 10 years at mm-hmm. least. I mean, they have a really long relationship with the program. Mm-hmm.
I know, like, I mostly am over on the other side, on the medium maximum side. But even over there, like, the ladies, they have their craft boxes. And, you know, like, for a lot of them, their craft boxes are, like, some of their most prized possessions that they have on site. And I mean, I've seen people make just amazing things with their craft boxes, and you know, they love to do it. And so there's something about it that really is therapeutic and just, you know, a real joy, I think.
Well, the ability to give gifts to your family is so huge, to be able to make something meaningful and give it to a family member is so important. But yeah, our students, almost none of them just quilts. You know, mm-hmm. we're always talking about what they're crocheting, what they're beading, what they're working on now. One of my students is crocheting a shark hat for her grandson, where the, like, your face comes out through the mouth of the shark,
mm-hmm.
Which sounds really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Do people share their stories? Do they talk about their stories while they're quilting and while they're sewing?
Yeah. I mean, at least personally, I always, I want to leave it open for women to tell their stories when they feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a space for that. But people sort of take it as you get to know each other and as they feel more comfortable. The thing that people often talk about related to quilting is their relationships between generations, their relationships with their moms and with their grandma, if anyone in their family quilted. For so many of us, quilting is so closely tied to like our family histories that I love teasing out those stories through the medium of quilts or of sewing.
So there's an element of there that's relationship building, definitely interpersonal relationship building between the instructors and the students. But there's also an intergenerational aspect for the insiders who are sharing stories of their mothers and their grandmothers, and it's a way of reconnecting with those.
Yeah, definitely. And even I think between the students themselves, we have such an age range and such an experience range in terms of people who have sewn or quilted before. So you see some of that knowledge passed between students as well in terms of their own histories with sewing. And I mean, this may be quilting in general, but I'm probably half the age of most of the instructors and the quilting program. So I appreciate being able to learn from women of all different ages in that setting.
How many people are involved in the program at Coffee Creek, roughly?
I don't know. I know that there are around 20 to 25 instructors teaching at any time.
Okay.
And then I would say 80 to 100 students is my guess.
Wow.
Because there are four classes running simultaneously. But they sort of swell and shrink depending on what's going on and what people's schedules are. But I do know that there's a huge number of volunteers who never set foot in Coffee Creek who are involved in the program. So we have, as I said, women who deal with the fabric donations, but we also have long-armed quilters. If you know anything about quilting, there are these amazing, incredibly expensive machines called long-armed quilting machines that allow you to do really intricate quilting stitches on the quilts. And we have a group of really dedicated long-armed volunteers who do long-armed quilting on each of the students' third quilts. So we send it out for the quilting stitches, and then it comes back. And that allows them to do these incredible patterns like musical notes, or we had somebody who did cowboy boots and cowboy hats in quilting stitches. I mean, really beautiful, incredible work that they do. And, you know, each of these people's piece serves to make this such a powerful program.
I'd like to talk for a few minutes about you and your own work. You are a fiber artist. How did you come to your discipline?
Well, I had always sort of been a crafter first. I came at art through craft and had been sewing and embroidering for a really long time, but didn't necessarily think of myself as an artist. And 4 or 5 years ago, I was taking classes and then teaching at a community art center in Chicago and really started talking about sort of the politics of art and craft and the way that women's work generally isn't considered art, the way disciplines like quilting, like sewing, like embroidery are devalued in the art world. And I reached a point where it was really important for me to say, no, you know, these things that I'm making, they are crafts, but they also have value as art. And it's important for me to take them seriously. And right now, quilting is really at the center of my artistic practice. Over the last couple of years, I've been involved in these large-scale community quilting projects that I do in collaborations with organizers or with groups in the community. I did an ongoing project in Chicago for several years called Gone But Not Forgotten, which is a memorial quilt for people who have been killed by the Chicago police. So we... It's been a really incredible, powerful project that has allowed us to come together in different settings around the city of Chicago and take time to sew, to read the stories of these individuals, and to talk about what we're going to do to commit ourselves to end the history of violence and impunity with the police. Right now, the quilt is is almost 40 feet long. It has more than 250 names, and it's still going, although less quickly since I've relocated to Portland.
Wow. Is that still in Chicago?
Or it is. Mm-hmm. It's still in Chicago. It's mm-hmm. actually going on exhibit in January with a citywide show called Do Not Resist, 100 Years of Police Violence, which sort of documents the history of violence with the Chicago police in art pieces and site-specific installations across the city of Chicago.
Mm.
So I'm really excited about being a part of that show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, if I was doing a quilt like that, I would start with the four people killed who were murdered because of the Haymarket Massacre.
Yeah.
I'd start with them.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a really long history in Chicago, yeah. for better or for worse, of state violence and of police violence.
Oh, wow. That's, so you did this project in Chicago. What else do you, like, what specifically do you do as an artist? I mean, do you make quilts? Do you do other kinds of fiber art? Is that mostly your focus is on quilting specifically?
Well, moving to Portland, I moved to Portland about a year ago, and it's really forced me to sort of shift up my practice a little bit, because the work I've done in Chicago is so based on these long-term relationships I have with organizers and communities. I didn't feel like I could come to Portland.
I mean, you could start one of those here in Portland, and it would be almost as long. I actually know people I could send your way right now to do stories.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really would love to, but I don't want to be an artist who sort of like parachutes into a place and says, I don't know anything about here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this project about your city.
Mm-hmm.
So for me right now, I'm sort of making relationships and getting to know people. And in the meantime, working on much smaller, more personal pieces. So I've been making a lot of small map quilts and using quilts to sort of explore the histories of things that interest me. So I made a quilted map of Portland in 1895 from an original sort of topographic map of the city.
Oh, wow.
Or I'm almost done with a map of an economic survey made of London during the Victorian period, which was the first sort of sociological study of poverty. So it's a city map where block by block it marks people's economic status with different colors.
Wow.
So I really love, I think textiles are well suited to research and education and also sort of meditation on questions that I have. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm definitely sort of working much smaller than I have in the past, but it's been really satisfying in its own way.
Mm-hmm. What led you to, I mean, why Coffee Creek? Why did you go to Coffee Creek? How did you become interested in working within like the criminal justice system? And what do you think that you bring to it that's unique?
Well, I think anyone who's working on police violence and policing automatically or should at least start thinking about prisons, right? Because they're two sides to the same coin. And when I was living in Chicago, I had a lot of friends who taught both at the jail and at the prisons. But it's been really hard for me as a textile artist to get into those settings in Illinois. Most everything I do involves like edged tools that are not allowed in prison settings, at least in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So I had sort of given up on that as a possibility. And when I came to Portland, right after I moved here, my friend's mom sent me a flyer about a fabric sale. And I was like, I'm not even going to look at this. I have too much fabric. It's dangerous. And I like archived it.
I totally get that feeling.
And then like a week later, I was like, oh, maybe it wouldn't hurt to just see when it's happening. And I pulled it back out again. And I was like, oh my God, this is a fabric sale to benefit a quilting program in a women's prison. It was the Coffee Creek Quilters have an annual fabric sale, which is amazing. It's in the spring. Ooh. I really recommend it.
Oh, where is it?
It's out in Wilsonville. It's like one exit past the prison, I think.
I didn't even know about this.
Yes, it is.
It's a secret.
It's a secret. The fabric is really amazing quality at really great prices. But I was just so excited. I was like, man, I shouldn't buy any fabric, but I should definitely start teaching.
Did you buy fabric?
I did. I bought so much fabric. I've used a bunch of it, though. So, and, you know, for me...
I love old stuff.
Oh, yeah. Best. I hope what I I hope what I bring to the program is, you know, I want to approach all of my students with a lot of respect. Respect for their experience and their knowledge and what they bring to the table. I hope to learn as much from them as they learn from me. You know, I feel really strongly that the prison system in this country is just an abomination. And so being able to do a small part to make the lives of women who are in prison right now, like, even a little bit better or more tolerable is really important for me. And what I think what I get from it is the companionship of being able to work with these women. I'm not teaching sewing right now. I don't have a big community here. And being able to go in and hang out with a bunch of funny, interesting, smart women making beautiful things is like the best part of my week easily.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, no, it's really fantastic.
Do you go in every week then?
I do. I teach every Thursday. And I think that my first year in Portland would have been way harder without this. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel a lot less lonely, and it's really valuable for me.
Oh, that sounds so great. We've just got a couple of minutes left. Do you know where people can go if they want to find out more about the quilting program? Like, if there's people who are listening who want to get involved, is there some place that they can go to find out more about it?
Yeah, so the Coffee Creek Quilters website, I do not have on me. I should.
But there's a website.
But there is a website.
So you can just Google it, Coffee Creek Quilters.
And they also have a Facebook page.
And a Facebook page, too. Coffee Creek Quilters?
Yes, Coffee Creek Quilters.
Okay, that's easy enough.
Which is where, you know, you can see some of the pictures from the program. You can find out about getting involved. I know that the program has more volunteers than they know what to do with. But yeah. It's definitely worth reaching out, because you never know when an instructor is going to have to step back, or, you know, sometimes it's all hands on deck for the fabric sale, so they can definitely use other people. And the fabric sale is in April or May. If you're a sewer at all, you should definitely check
out. Oh, I'm definitely going now that I know about it.
But you have to go early. I got there like a half an hour after it started, and there were women like lined up outside the door.
Oh my goodness.
It's a serious sale.
And if people would like to find out more about your work, how can they learn about that?
Yeah, I have a website. The website is rachelawallace.com, and that's spelled RachelAwallace.com.
RachelAwallace.com.
Yeah, RachelAwallace.com. Okay. And you can contact me through there. I'm always really interested in collaborations, getting involved in other sort of community art projects that are going on, especially, you know, getting to know what's going on in the community in Portland. So I'd love for people to reach out.
Great. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for being on Prison Pipeline and sharing your stories about the Coffee Creek Quilting Program and about your own work.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks to everyone who makes this show possible. I had heard about it before I moved here, so I'm excited to be on.
Great. Well, thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks. You too.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Oregon's child incarceration rate is one of the worst in the country. A new investigative report by Disability Rights Oregon found that kids in custody at NorCor, a jail in the Dalles, receive harsh discipline, including solitary confinement, for infractions such as asking what time it is or for just looking around. These kids are as young as 12 years old. Other states are reducing child incarceration. Why not Oregon? Join us on Prison Pipeline, February 5th at 6:30 p.m.
Thank you. KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 28th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. The Cascade Festival of African Films shows us Africa through the eyes of Africans, rather than a vision of Africa packaged for Western viewers. The films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include 76 and The Footprints of Pan-Africanism and more at the Hollywood Theater, and The African Who Wanted to Fly, Foreign Bodies, Wulu, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104 at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 20th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 2nd through March 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Happy birthday!
The Oregon Historical Society is featuring 50 Years of KBOO. The exhibit was created to relay our history and demonstrate the importance of community radio. The exhibit tells our story in our members' own words. We have an online tour, which features highlights from the exhibit and companion audio clips. The exhibit runs until July 29th at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Imago Theater's production of Shakespeare's The Rape of Lucrece. The play runs from January 25th through February 8th at the Imago Theater in Portland. The chamber art musical The Rape of Lucrece is an intense,